Paddy Pigskin with Gary Somerville in association with DraftKings.
Hello and welcome to episode 47 of Paddy Pigskin in association with DraftKings. I'm Gary Somerville and we are back off an international break this week. But before we get into it, I've got to give a big shout out to the Irish Wolfhounds, Ireland's national team. They had their first fully competitive fixture over the weekend in Navan Rugby Club against the Belgian Barbarians, and my God, what a game. I was lucky to watch it online on the Facebook stream. The lads stuffed a two-point conversion attempt at the death, so they won 2019. Maybe the 2019 number is a good omen for Irish football next year, moving into the new year. Who knows? But again, shout out to the Wolfhounds. Fantastic achievement. Great day for Irish football, and hopefully many more nights like that in the future. So we're back with NFL talk this week. I have Barry beside me. We're going to get back into our regular schedule, which is the pick six. We're picking six games from the weekend that we're going to discuss, and then we'll move into our two-point conversion, where we will preview the week eight games, almost halfway through the season now at this point, and we'll give 2 points for who we think is going to win the game, first of all, and why they are going to win the game. So, pick six from week seven, two-point conversion for week eight, episode 47, Paddy Pigskin. Let's get after it. Say congratulations. Work so hard, forgot how to vacation. They ain't never had the dedication. People hate and say we're changing, look, we made it. Yeah, we made it. Player dedication for episode 47 is, of course, John Lynch, former strong safety and current GM of the San Francisco 49ers. He was born in Hinsdale, Illinois in 1971 and played football, baseball and basketball at Torrey Pines High School in San Diego, California. He starred in baseball at Stanford and was drafted by the Marlins, but he also changed from QB to safety before his junior year, so he was involved in football there at Stanford as well. He actually played a few games in the Marlins minor league system as a right-handed pitcher, but ultimately stuck with football going forward as a professional career. He was drafted 82nd in the third round of the 1993 draft by the Tampa Bay Buccaneers and would go on to play 11 years in that Buccaneers Tampa 2 defense. He went to 5 Pro Bowls with the Bucs and 4 in a row when he moved to the Denver Broncos after joining in 2004. He won a Super Bowl ring versus the Raiders 48-21 at Super Bowl 37 in his home high school town of San Diego. Stats-wise, he finished with 1,058 tackles, 26 ints, and 16 forced fumbles. He is in the Bucs Ring of Honor. He is also in the Broncos Ring of Fame. And as I mentioned, he's the 49ers GM. He became their GM in January 2017 after a 9-year career in broadcasting. And he's probably going to be in the Hall of Fame sooner or later. It's probably only a matter of time. So episode 47, John Lynch, strong safety and GM of the 49ers. This episode is for him. So I've got Barry in here beside me. Let's get cracking with this week's episode of Paddy Pigskin.
You know. Yeah. If you know, you know. If you know, you know. This thing of ours, oh, this thing of ours. A fraternity of drug dealers ringing off. I just happen to be alumni. Too legit, they still looking at me with one eye. The company I keep is not corporate enough. Child rebel soldier, you ain't orphan enough. A rapper turned trapper can't morph into us. But a trapper turned rapper can't.
So I'll have Barry back on the show. Me, Barry, how are you?
I'm feeling great. It is the night of game 2 of the World Series. Sox pulled out a great one last night, and we're hoping that David Price does not shit the bed.
It is, like, I have to say, it is good fun being in a city where the team is in a championship, you know, even though neither of us are Pats fans.
And we also root for the team.
Yeah, that's true. Like, I've been here for 2 Super Bowls now that the Pats have been in, and even though I don't support the team, you do kind of feed off the buzz. Everybody's, like, super excited about the game and stuff. But yeah, the advantage is this time, we both support the Red Sox. Me working right outside Fenway is also good buzz as well. Coming into the week, there were camera crews everywhere and all that sort of stuff.
So it's good fun. Hopefully we get the win. And as it's autumn or fall, as you say over here,
yeah,
we're going to go with, it's been a few weeks now actually since we did the beer review, isn't it?
I think the last time you did it was the time I was on, so which back then the Bucks were 2-0. Now they are 3-3.
A distant yeah, memory. Because last week we had the international break, so that was done cross-Atlantic. And the week before we had a bye week.
Yep.
So it is Shipyard Brewing Company. Shipyard's around here, isn't it?
Yep, they are.
Yes. Oh, no, Rochester.
Really?
Maybe there's a brewery here.
Okay, I think Rochester. We see it so often here.
Yeah.
Okay.
So it is Shipyard, and it's smashed pumpkin ale with natural flavors.
God, smashed is right, 9%.
Oh, fuck. Didn't realize it was 9%. I just saw the orange can with the pumpkin on it and figured it was kind of light enough. So we'll crack this open for episode 47, and we will get into our, back into our segments. It's been a few weeks, like all of our segments. Pick six. We'll start with the Giants, 20 points versus the Falcons, 23 in Atlanta. That was the Monday night game. Not really talking about this for the game because as we were texting in the group, it was fucking shy up until, what, the fourth quarter? It really kind of came alive.
But even the fourth quarter was just like Eli got like 1 second, threw the ball as far as he could, and Sterling Shepard still had to slow down to catch it. And then it's like you have like the two worst QB sneaks I've ever seen in my life.
Like, I don't think anybody knows really what the hell was going on there. Like, two plays that weren't going to happen. And secondly, chewed up a lot of needless time.
It was unbelievable. It's like one of the scenarios where, like, you know, you're playing for two scores, kick a field goal.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like a minute to go, like, kick a field goal, get the ball back, and then do it again.
There were there were some questionable decisions there where it's just, it's just a feature of a dysfunctional team.
Yeah. But then we wake up today to then see the idea that, you know, the fire sale really has started. Yeah.
So, like, not really mad. I'm not annoyed about the Eli Apple trade as much because, you know, he was 10th overall pick in 2016. They got two picks back. He hasn't really justified that 10th overall 10th pick moniker that came with
his
pick.
Getting a fourth rounder back is something for sure. It's better than the compensatory you were probably going to get if he had gone to a different team.
Yeah.
The other part too is that for him, it's probably a great landing spot because he actually gets a tandem with an entire Ohio State secondary. He has Marshawn Lattimore there, who they were in college at Ohio State the exact same time.
Yeah.
I think the Saints have Von Bell also. Yeah. So like, you're basically having your like OSU secondary there to where like,
which is bad because they've been bad. So what does that say about my book is that they have this Ohio State secondary and it hasn't been that great, you know?
But the same point, like, I think that all those guys are individually very talented. And maybe it's just they need the right guys around them where they know how to play the right way.
Yeah.
The Saints are getting better in news. I know we're going to talk about that.
Yeah, yeah. Like, the one that hurt was the announcement today that Snacks Harrison, who he's very underrated. Like, every year, it's just because he hasn't got the sack numbers and all that. Like, consistently is one of the top run stoppers in the game.
Yep.
Up until this week, he was sixth on PFF's rankings, you know, behind the likes of Aaron Donald and stuff. So he's in good company. And what annoyed me was, I know you said like he has the big contract going with it and stuff, but we got more back for Eli Apple than we did with Harrison. I think that was what pissed Giants fans off. It's like, hang on, this guy is one of the best on the defense, if not the best, year in, year out, and you only get a fifth. What's going on?
So I think there's three factors that made it harder there. So I'm fully with you, and I think like a fourth rounder would have been ideal, something around there. The hard part is three different parts. One, you just took a fourth rounder for Eli Apple. So by comparison, teams are going to feel that Apple's a more valuable asset than Harrison. And I know that from a pure performance standpoint, maybe that doesn't exactly line up.
Yeah.
But the other reasons why this is hard is that when you trade a younger player on a better contract at a more valuable position, which is Eli Apple, and you get a fourth, it's hard to also ask for a fourth for an older player on a bigger contract who's on the decline. I know his stats have been great. I know his role against run defense has been awesome, and I think he's a great fit with the Lions who got him. But I think it's one of those bad scenarios where you're kind of in between the fourth and the fifth, and the second someone bit, you're like, fine, we'll take this.
Right now. Yeah, sad to see him go because he has been a consummate professional. He's been very good. When other team or other players rather have been shit around him, he's always done well. And this kind of raises the question now: is what do you do with Odell and Landon Collins? Because like you're essentially gonna waste these guys' prime years while you're in rebuild mode.
Well, I mean, but at the same point, like, I don't think the goal is to say this is like a 3-5 year rebuild. I think the whole idea is like, how many draft picks can we get this year?
And flip it around. Do you think they can flip it around in a year?
I don't know if they can, but the reality is I think we are underestimating how much Eli's inability to throw is just destroying that team. I think if you take almost every draft pick and say your first draft pick is going to be Herbert, Drew Lock, whoever it is, every other pick we have, we're going to be devoting to some form of line, D-line, O-line, and just purely shore up the trenches.
Mm.
And I think people underestimate how much of a difference that can make to that team overall. Because if you look at pure weapons, you have a ton of them.
Oh, yeah, which is the frustrating thing.
Franchise tight end, two franchise wide receivers, franchise safety. It's like
there's talent everywhere. Exactly. So it's not coming together.
You have one of the top 10 DNs in the league in Olivier Vernon. Like, you have a ton of players.
Mm.
And that's why I think that like people underestimate, because it's so easy to look at a team like this and see how dysfunctional they are. But I think if you get a QB who knows what he's doing, who can make, not even be super smart, but just listen to Pat Shurmur and make consistent throws, you get a line that can give him more than 2 seconds.
So listen to Pat, and if you saw the lip reading, it was like, throw it to Odell.
Yeah, he's like, why he had the fourth down?
Throw it
Why
to the
didn't
guy.
You throw it to him?
Fairness, Odell lives for those prime time games on the likes of a Monday night and tours. You know, he always does very well.
But this
did
one,
well
like,
again.
It seems to me like, so I was having a talk with a friend of mine, Will, who's a big Giants fan this morning. I feel like you have like six untouchable guys, and everyone else is up for grabs. Odell, Shepard, Saquon Barkley, Evan Engram, Landon Collins, Will Hernandez. Anyone outside of that list, if you want them, if you give us the right deal, we'll listen.
There's one or two guys on the defensive line who they just drafted in BJ Hill and Dalvin Tomlinson, I think is his full name. So those guys are the reason why they let Snacks go is because they have some good young defensive
in those
line
cases,
talent.
It makes sense, right? But like if someone called and said like we'll give you like a second rounder for Olivier Vernon,
there was a report there that came out today, I think, that a lot of the players are up for grabs if the price is right.
Yep.
We'll move on to that fucking shit show. We'll move on to the Saints, who beat the Ravens 24-23. And this was one of those intriguing matchups where it was the number one score on offense against the number one defense. And the Ravens had only been giving up 12.8 points up until that point. We spoke about this before the game. Traditionally, it's the number one score on offense that Wednesday's matchups, and they just squeaked it out.
They are now 8-1 in their last 9 matchups in the regular season.
Pretty good. And Bree is like, you know, pedestrian enough by his standards. He was 22 for 30. He had 212 yards and 2 touchdowns. He joined the 500 touchdown club. So the illustrious club with only 4 members. You got Peyton Manning, Brett Favre, and Tom Brady, of course. But what will this game be remembered for?
Justin Tucker's missed extra point.
And this was his first missed in 223 attempts. Ever.
So
223 attempts.
So in his NFL career, it's his first ever miss. So he'd made all the first 222 before this.
Which is, considering amazing. They've moved the kicks back, that's a very, very good stat.
And it gets even funnier when you go back to college. He was 71 for 71 in college.
Fuck. Where did he go to college? He
went to Texas.
Okay.
So now all of a sudden you're looking at this and he is, for his career, 293 for 294.
So you compiled some some probability stats there during the week to stack up against Tucker. So
because I was very curious about like how rare an event this really was. So here are some interesting things in life that can happen that are more likely than Justin Tucker missing an extra point. You are more likely to be audited by the IRS, 1 in 160. You are more likely to date a millionaire, 1 in 215. More likely to write a best-selling novel, 1 in 220. And you are more likely to have a child who is a genius by IQ standards, 1 in 250. Sadly enough, Justin Tucker is missing an extra point is still more likely than being injured by a toilet, which is 1 in 10,000.
Like, how does that even happen? Like, do you your knee against the toilet?
They literally compiled
the
hospital records by the discharge being injured by a toilet.
Slipping off it? Would that... get sweaty down there, you slip off
the
rim or something.
Like, if you just make that slight slip, you hit your tailbone. Are you really going to go to the emergency room after? It's like, what happened? I fell. From where? I'd rather not talk about it. Like,
I don't know. These days, you see some crazy shit where people are going... Stuff that's going in places where it's not supposed to go.
Hey, cocaine's a hell of a drug, man.
That was kind of overshadowed, or just it took the glimmer off the win from the Saints, the fact that Tucker missed that and didn't get to see overtime.
It did, but all I would say is like the Saints moved the ball very well and they're really rounding into the best form of themselves.
Yeah.
That you can really feel. Like ever since like week 1 and like that fluke game against the Bucks, like they have just been consistently getting better. The defense is playing better and better. But really, now having Ingram back, everyone's complaining, especially in fantasy, like, oh, Kamara's down to like 15 touches a game. But that's how you keep him fresh.
They don't give a fuck about your fantasy stats. No, exactly. They don't want to run him into the ground.
That's what I'm saying. Like, you have Ingram to spell in there. You have Kamara with 15 touches. You have Breeze throwing only 30 passes, like you said. Like, no one's getting overexerted here. And that's
and they're still winning.
And that's a great win on the road, where we always classically said the Saints could never win.
Yeah. Very good point. We'll go to game number 3 in our pick 6. That was the Pats winning on the road in Soldier Field. They beat the Bears 38-31. And this was a game at the start of the season when I saw what the Bears were doing, and especially when Mac joined, I was like, this is a potential banana skin for the Pats here.
Yeah.
And it nearly proved to be that if it wasn't for Kevin White, all you need to do was stretch maybe, what, a foot?
I wouldn't blame him as much as I would blame Mitch Trubisky for
getting
a little short.
You know, it wasn't
the rest of the game.
Because he didn't get a clean throw, really. It was a Lawrence guy kind of got in his face and didn't get him the full step through. But fair play to White going up and making that play, because he's done fuck all else since he's joined them. And it was interesting to see they had Josh Gordon in there in the hands team.
I mean, you might as well. Julio Jones is really the trailblazer there. Everyone thinks it's going to happen now.
And this was one of those classic cases for the Pats where they have one of their marquee players is injured, not suiting up. This case, it was Gronk, and other guys step up. James White, I think it was 97 yards. He had 2 touchdowns. Like Josh Gordon himself, 4 receptions for 100 yards.
And thank God that Sony Michel, they came out of it and said it wasn't a serious injury.
And that's his, what's his, third 100 yards rushing game in a row now?
For Michel?
Yeah.
No, he got injured in the first quarter.
Oh,
he only got like 2 points in fantasy. Oh, like he was
never mind
out
then.
Right away. Like he got twisted. James White had a huge game which carried it on, and they ended up having the fun Kenyon Barner experience after that.
Consider that point that I made about 100 yard rushing games absolutely garbage.
No, he's been so solid. So that's why it's like I don't care for the Pats, but it's like just good for football to see like young running backs still doing things.
And even Cordell Patterson, like he stepped up. He had that 95 yard kickoff return, so that's why they got him. He makes those plays, and you know, could be the difference in the end.
So
Jer texted us there earlier on before we came on. He had a little stat of his own about Cordell Patterson. So hit us with it there.
So it's since 2013, there's only 3 players to have averaged more than 28.3 yards per kickoff return in a season. Cordarrelle Patterson on the Vikings, Cordarrelle Patterson on the Raiders, Cordarrelle Patterson on the Patriots.
Okay, hell.
Like, I got to give it to Jared. That's a phenomenal list.
Don't know where he got that from, but
it's absolutely fantastic.
And the Bears' defense is a little bit concerning. They've given up 69 giggity points in the last 2 games. Like, we've all thought, it's hard to really maintain that pace, isn't it, throughout the year?
Cause it is.
Just like we see defensive coordinators, you know, game plan for offensive players, we also see it the other way.
Yeah.
Like when Brock Osweiler beat the Bears last week, was saying, okay, there's the blueprint now. Brock Osweiler is able to beat the Bears.
Yep.
Surely someone as genius as Bill Belichick would be able to design
catch
something.
On to it.
Yeah.
But again, like you're seeing this, though, like it really is a blueprint, and I hate to make it sound so basic because it isn't, obviously. But it's just the idea that like you completely eliminate all under center snaps. Every single time you're going to be doing things, it's out of shotgun.
Yeah.
Which means you make that pass rush have to run to you every single time. You tire them out. You do quick passes where the corners can't cover right away. Because as good as that D-line in front 7 is, the corners are kind of the weak point on that defense.
And that's something the Pats do the best.
Yeah,
they
exactly.
get the quick
it's
passes
just,
out to the likes of Edelman and the scat backs.
Exactly.
That's what they
and
do
just,
so
it
well.
It was slants to Gordon, go to Edelman. It was just consistently quick to James White. You eventually exhaust a defense like that. Then on the other end, you just say, beat us, Mitchell Trubisky. That is the game plan. It really is. As long as we do not turn over the ball, we stop taking the ball under center and giving the defense a head start at getting to our quarterback. And then we have a solid enough defense that says we can stop the run. So therefore, Mitch beat us. Overall, you're probably going to turn out pretty okay in most of those games.
Yeah.
And that's the problem for the Bears this year. Is like as much as all this goes, unless Trubisky makes a leap or the Bears get smart and finally try to look at someone else. I know it's only year 2. But there's a limit to what this team looks like it can have because we keep seeing Khalil Mack getting tired. We keep seeing the defense slip in the second half relative to what they were doing.
And they shouldn't be, because like they're fucking stacked talent-wise with young guys. They shouldn't
but again,
be slipping.
It's a classic push and pull, right? It's like you're running as hard as you can at that QB. You want him. He's farther back than he is. You get too close to him, hit him the wrong way, roughing the passer now. Like
true.
All of these penalties slow down a D-line,
which
is the worst thing that can possibly happen to the Bears. So there's a really interesting trend that I want to talk about for a second. So all that is we grew up with was, and I'm going to like leave this open because I want to see if you get this too, which is If you score blank number of points, you typically win a game in the NFL. How, what number of points would you say that was? Like when we were growing up, when we watched games, like people would say
30 plus.
Yep, exactly. So 30 was exactly what I was looking for. So typically, like we would always say, you break 30, you win the game. Mm. And over the past few years, that's actually held extremely true. So I just pulled this for the last two seasons, and I pulled this for this season because I had a theory and I wanted to look into it.
This is the kind of stats you don't get on other podcasts. I don't care. We love the numbers, man.
I know. So over the past two seasons, if you scored 30 points, on average, you won 86% of the time.
Wow.
That's a phenomenal win rate.
That's pretty good.
If you scored 35 plus points, it went up to about 92. So like
that's near scientific certainty. Yeah. That's the realm I want
to
be in.
So you're starting to say like
95% plus.
Exactly. So you're starting to say like, oh, it's fantastic, right? Like the key is 30. What I was thinking when I was watching a lot of these games, and this was kind of an evidence of it, is I feel like the plateau, maybe it's this year, maybe it's just like people are going to figure it out with the penalties, maybe defenses will get smarter, but it feels like the plateau is moving from 30 to 35.
Yeah.
So I looked into this. So for this season alone, when teams score 35 plus points, they are 26-6, which is about an 81% win rate, way down from the 90s
in the past seasons,
and much more in line with the 30.
Yeah.
The crazy part now is if you go 30 plus points, you only have about an 80% win rate this season compared to like 86, 85.
Yeah.
And people might think, oh, you know, what's the big deal? 6%. But over 16 games, you know, that's expected value. That's about a win. Mm. That's a difference right there.
Yeah.
To a point where we're seeing scoring is going up. We're seeing these levels are going up. And it's not a security to just get 30 points anymore, to where you really are seeing teams. And the Rams are a great example of this. Consistently putting the pedal to the metal and just saying we need to keep scoring because they realize that it's a numbers game in the end. It's not we hit 30, they have 10, we're fine. It's no, we need to keep going because in this league with these penalties and how offenses are running right now, no real lead that's just 30 points is safe as much as it used to be.
And do you reckon that's like Sean McVay, young head coach, he's grown up with this kind of style, like he's evolved as a head coach with this new style of high offensive production. So he knows, he's looking at those numbers like, Jared, we just need to keep scoring because we know that we're going to be in shootouts more often than not. Yeah. Score 30 plus, we win most games.
I think it's a bit of it. And you're seeing with the Patriots now too, is like grew up with the Patriots that would win games 20-17. Like low score, we did just enough. They've won their last like few games like, you know, 43-40 against the Chiefs, 38-31 against the Bears. Like, when you don't have a stellar defense, the goal is score a ton of points. And it's happening a lot more to a point where it's actually a drastic increase.
I'd love to see the Giants score 30 points. It's happened, once since 2015. We still lost the game, though.
I know. So there's actually a beautiful symmetry that's been happening for the past few years where there's actually about 50 35-plus point games per season. So like 50 different times a team will score 35 or more. This season through seven weeks, we're at 32. Which puts us on pace for about 78.
Way more,
almost a 60% increase is what we're on pace for relative to the past few years of scoring 35 plus. So overall, again, like all these things are going to be interesting, and I'll definitely like focus back on this as the season ends up. But my big theory coming forward is that 35 is the new 30 for what it comes to like what you need to win.
Yeah. No, it makes sense because you see like a lot of the softness now on the penalties. You know, like DPI is common as muck these days, like guys are getting PI for nothing. And then you see like players like Brady where they thought, you know, you thought he had him wrapped up and then he escapes and scores a touchdown. That's sixes and sevens across the board every week, you know. We'll move on to your books.
Oh god.
You went against him, you said that the Browns are gonna win, but they did win 26-23 in overtime. And in fairness to the Browns, like, yeah, they're not getting the wins yet. They've gotten two, but fuck me, they're entertaining to watch. Like, week in, week out, I love watching them because you just don't know what the hell
I just can't
happen.
Wait for them to fire Hugh Jackson. Like, it's all I come back to is, like, there's too much talent on that team.
Yeah.
Like,
they are talented.
Like, literally, we tried to throw the game away. Jameis literally threw a pick at midfield in overtime. Game over.
Yeah, still couldn't.
Yeah.
But Jabril Peppers did have a messed, muffed, messed up punt as well. So there was that. But yeah, that was the longest. Was that the longest field goal by, how do you pronounce it?
Catanzaro. In his career, yeah.
But the longest field goal in overtime history as well, I believe, at 59 yards.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah,
actually.
So like there was a couple of nuggets there.
I know it's the second longest kick in Bucks history.
Yeah. Who do you know who the
Matt Bryant.
Was? Matt Bryant.
Against the Eagles, it was like a decade ago before we were dumb enough to let him go because we're like, oh, kicker's not a big deal. Mm. Fucking Matt Bryant is still kicking for the Falcons.
And we're starting to see, you know, like Mayfield took the reins a few weeks ago from Tyrod Taylor. But now one of their early draft picks as well at a running back position, Chubb, he's taking the reins now. And that was his first full start. He had over 80 yards and a touchdown.
I heard from a friend, and I really love this take. It's kind of like, you've seen the movie Moneyball, right?
Oh, yeah.
So it's like, this is the equivalent of like trading like the starting like catcher because you're like, I want you to play this guy.
Yeah, yeah.
So this was literally John Dorsey just saying, how in the world can I convince you to play Nick Chubb? Fine, I'm trading Carlos Hyde. Take him, Jaguars. I'll take a fifth rounder. I just want to start playing Nick Chubb.
And if you look at Mayfield's line, like he had 23 completions on 34 passes, just over 200 yards and two touchdowns. I would have expected more against the Tampa Bay secondary. That I'm sure you will agree is very porous to quarterbacks. But just one of those days.
I think it was just the issue was his line was non-existent.
Yeah.
Carl Nassib had 3 sacks. Mr. Invest That.
I know, yeah. So by his reckoning, 10%, he should have what?
I mean,
he'll have almost three and a half sacks next week.
He's already halfway there.
So yeah, your Bucks won. That was your ballsy pick of the week.
Yeah, that went backwards.
Going with the Browns, that went backwards. Bittersweet because your team did win a game.
I mean, again, like I'm okay with this, but the reality is like it sucks to win a game where you feel like you should lose.
Yeah.
Like as much as you're like, oh, that's awesome. If you're like competing for a playoff spot, you'll take it.
Yeah,
but when
you're
just in this in-between spot, you're like, what are we fucking
whatever.
Doing?
Yeah. Fifth game in our pick six, AFC South clash. The Texans swept the floor with the Jacksonville Jags 20-7. And Blake Bortles, he is who you thought he was. He got benched for Cody Kessler.
So, yeah, he is. I mean, he got benched. They say he's starting in London because he's Sir Blake Bortles. 8 touchdowns, 1 pick, 3-0 record. So we'll see how that one goes.
He does play well in London, all right.
But at the same point, like it's just so concerning to see because this team just looks like it's given up on itself. Midway, like, and you can see it, like, Jalen Ramsey was talking about this, because he always talks about everything, like, the second that, like, things aren't going well, that defense is, like, we can try to hold them, but after a certain point, you're like, we can't get pick sixes to, like, win this game.
Yeah.
We can stop them as many times as we want, but Blake's just going to give it right back to them.
And the problem is, with a young, kind of cocky, swaggy group of players, on defense at least, is when the wins stop coming in.
Then there's a lot of diva problems.
Yeah, a lot of diva problems. You saw them arguing on the sideline over the weekend. And, you know, it's only a matter of time if they keep losing before.
But I also get their frustration, though. Like,
yeah, of course.
Like, Deshaun Watson beat them. He had 130 passing yards.
Yeah.
Like, if you hold
and
the
one
QB,
touchdown.
If you hold
and
QB,
50% passing completion.
But if you hold a QB to those stats in this
still
era,
lose.
You should win every single game.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, that's as simple as it goes.
And it must be quite serious. Like, Leonard Fournette, it was always kind of week to week. And now it's a few weeks, and
know,
he still hasn't been in.
Really,
and now they went out and got Carlos Hyde. And to be fair to TJ Yeldon, very good pass catching back.
Much more of a scat back. Yeah,
yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and they haven't really got that bruiser. And
I think they're doing this as a stopgap solution, anyways. They're just saying we need to get back to what we did before, which is using Yeldon as a workhorse back is killing him for the second half of games.
Yeah,
and I think they just need to get back to like we're gonna have both these guys in the game. One guy's gonna go out for routes. One guy's gonna do whatever, and like they can rotate it better just to preserve their guys. Ultimately, unless Bortles gets his shit together, this team is just going nowhere though.
And you've always said, and you've showed the stats to prove it, Bortles always does better when he hasn't got Leonard Fournette. But eventually, you know, that was only on a year sample,
a year of games as a sample size.
Here
or there. Yeah. The second it's extended, it's a real issue.
Exactly, yeah, because it's only a matter of time before teams are just like, hang on a second, you know, this is Blake
Bortles.
Oh, so
we can just hang back and like just make this guy beat us? Yeah.
Exactly.
Did you hear about how injured Deshaun Watson was for travel?
No.
He was, his ribs were so bruised that he was not allowed by the team to take a flight from Houston to Jacksonville for the game. So he had to take a bus for 12 hours from Houston to Jacksonville to play in the game to then take another 12-hour bus ride back.
Holy shit. I didn't see that at all.
And it's just like, and like Steph put this in like the greatest way possible. She's like, if you were too injured to fly in a plane,
you shouldn't be playing a football game.
Exactly. And that guy just beat the Jags 20-7.
Fair play.
That's how bad they are right now.
But also, fair play to Deshaun Watson.
No,
big nutsack on
credit upon credit for playing. It's like amazing gutsy performance, but it's just like, it's not like he put up like 350 yards and 3 TDs. Like, he didn't play a great game and they still won. Like, this is a really big issue for Jacksonville unless they start figuring things out.
Right. Pick six. Let's give some love to London, yeah? We got Chargers 20, Titans 19.
That was a fun game.
Chargers, that was a late scratch actually with Melvin Gordon there. Yep. I was kind of surprised to see that, but you had a hamstring issue and I don't know, maybe the travel didn't help.
I think the travel especially, because you're talking about them going from West Coast to London. That's 12 long, plus hours of flights.
Long trip, yeah. He probably maybe developed a bit of swelling there in the hamstring. And River stepped up again, who has like a nice little crop of wide receivers with the two Williams and Keenan Allen. Just imagine if they had Hunter Henry there at the tight end spot, they'd have a nice little crop of receivers. But he got the job done, 300 yards, two touchdowns. Nothing spectacular, but he did enough. Starting off with a 75-yarder on offense is always nice to put points up on the board. But they did splutter near the end. You know, they were 17-6 up in the third quarter, nearly blew it. What do you think of the play call there from Mike Vrabel? That's got to be it. That was probably a very, very long flight back to Nashville for him.
Yeah, I mean, again, so like, it's a classic. Like, I agree with the philosophy. I disagree with the execution. Like, I really like the idea that, like, hey, it's 20 seconds left. Let's go for
let's
the win.
Let's go for it, yeah.
Yeah, like, this team has done whatever. But the second that you get that, you know, I think it was encroachment on the defense that brings it to the 1 yard line.
Yeah.
How do you, like, you have Derrick Henry there, and I know that they're not crazy about Derrick Henry, but if
but
you're
he's a
tell
big,
me,
he's a big boy.
Yeah, if you're gonna tell me with that line, with Derrick Henry, who's like 230 pounds, if not more, that you can't get 1 yard, well, it was ridiculous.
Like, just reminds me of that Super Bowl. You have 1 yard and you try to throw a ball over the middle.
And
bad things happen.
Well, and it's the same thing that killed me, is that you have a mobile quarterback. You have to put him in a position where he's an option to do something.
Yeah,
I took the ball, I look up, oh, I have this, like, the pass. He didn't set his feet. He just threw it with his hand because it's so close.
Yeah. I would have preferred to see.
It didn't work out. What are the odds?
Would have preferred to see maybe a rollout or something where
just
he can keep it or throw it. Like,
exactly.
Over the middle. In such a tight space, it's just too many bodies in the way.
I know. Oh, and I misspoke. It was defensive holding on the first two version. But it's just like, it's too
sloppy.
Much at that point, yeah. But like, the bigger thing that's crazy is like, I'm starting to see a bit of a trend in the idea that like, this seems like the way that you stop great offenses though, is that you just control time and possession in this era.
Yeah.
Which is, the Chargers had five possessions and they scored on four of them. They had really good execution. They had one drive where they didn't score.
Mm-hmm.
But they only had five drives. As opposed to like having many, many more, because the Titans just ran the ball. And after a certain point, like, that's going to kind of work, because you're keeping them off long enough, you get that one random drive where they don't score. And next thing you know, you can catch up. And it's really interesting to see that, where like, unless you are a team that can start off quick like the Chiefs do, and it's just touchdown, 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 eventually that pace is going to come back and bite you in some regard.
Yeah. Absolutely. I think they're getting Bosa back soon, are they?
They're supposed to be getting him back in like a couple of weeks. They're saying like early to mid-November.
Okay.
Which when they do like this, turns into one of the scariest teams in football.
Changes them dramatically, yeah. Right, that's our pick six for the week seven games. We'll take a quick break and we'll move on to the two-point conversion for week eight. Do you like playing fantasy football? Okay, great. Do you like winning money? Fantastic. You can do both at DraftKings, the leader in one-week fantasy sports. DraftKings have paid out over $5 billion in prizes today. And this week, you can enter a contest for free with your first deposit. With one-week fantasy at DraftKings, you choose when to play. There's no season-long commitment. You can join our Paddy Pigskin League. We are up to 75 people in it. All you got to do is choose your players, stay under the 50k salary cap, and see how your team stacks up against me and the lads and everybody else in the league. There's also plenty of public leagues. No matter what level you're at, there's always a contest for you to play on DraftKings. So if you've been thinking about doing it, now is the time to sign up. You can do that by going to DraftKings.com or download the app today. Use promo code Paddy to enter a contest for free on us this weekend. We are first deposit and compete for your share of cash prizes. Make sure you let me know when you sign up. I'll add you to our league and you can have the crack. You can trash talk. You can do whatever you want and you can win some money by playing fantasy football. So DraftKings.com or download the app. Promo code is Paddy, P-A-D-D-Y. Only at DraftKings, the game inside the game. Minimum $5 deposit required. Eligibility restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com for details. All right, we will get into our two-point conversion. So to recap, last week I went 11-3. You went 10-4. Despite I had one down wrong in the graphic, I had you picking the Broncos when you.
I was a fair sport. I admit it.
You were now fair play. Well, Jared called you out over it. He's like, you didn't fucking pick the Broncos. So that was amended, and you did finish 10-4, which is quite a respectable score in the end.
I'm fine with it. Yeah.
We've got two teams on bye this week, right?
So it's actually four teams.
Oh, four teams. Okay. Who are you saying bye Felicia to this week?
I would actually need to take a look.
Okay, so we'll cover it at the end. Yeah. We'll cover the Thursday night game, which this podcast will be out on Thursday. So the game tonight, I guess we can say. 4-3 Dolphins at the 4-3 Houston Texans. This is the 2-point conversion. Give me your 2 points. Go.
So I say the Texans are going to win this game. I think, one, we've seen too much of Brock Osweiler at this point, and I think defenses are starting to get used to it, especially J.J. Watt or David Clowney. And I think, two, is I think that no travel this week will do Deshaun Watson very well. And I think he'll have a much better game.
Houston are 4 wins in a row now since losing to the Giants.
Yep.
So they are on a roll. They have a lot of momentum. And I think Brock Osweiler is going to get an absolutely wonderful welcome back in Houston this week, which will
they
really spur him on to play well.
They wasted $18 million in the second round. who's not happy?
I've got the Texans winning this. Then we go to London again Sunday morning. It's a 9:30 here. I think it's on TV. We have
which is just the best.
Oh, it's great. But then when we're playing flag football,
you come back for the second half, then all of a sudden it's like you have 30 minutes before the next game. That's true. Really roll into it.
We've got Jers Eagles 3-4 at the Jacksonville Jags, also 3-4. Who you got?
So my question is, I don't think this qualifies for ballsy pick to pick the Eagles because I know the Jags are undefeated. But yeah,
in London.
I know, in London, exactly. I feel like it's... The Eagles need to get back on track right now. And I feel like if you lose this game, it's a really just down note to be 3-5 right now. Yeah. So like, my biggest reason is just desperation. The second point is just, I don't think that Bortles is going to turn around, even though it's London. It just doesn't feel... It just feels like the year where like it's just not working out.
Yeah, fair enough. At the start of the year, this looked like such a glamorous game when it was announced. Like
those defending poor fans,
defending champs against AFC like really good AFC team, you know, in London, fucking fantastic game. And now, as we're at week 8, not so glamorous. But the Eagles have blown 2 late leads in the last 4 weeks, so they really need to kind of fix that issue that they have going on. But like we said, the Jags are starting to sink. I don't think they win this time in London, so I've got the Eagles winning as well. And then we have a rematch, which is only a few weeks ago. Of week 1. We have the 2-4-1 Browns at the 3-2-1.
Go. Yeah, sorry.
Steelers.
You said 3-2-1, I had to.
Who you got here?
I had to pick Steelers. It's in Pittsburgh, so it's just like the Steelers know that they came out of this bye week in the best way possible. Everyone in their division lost. So instantly they move up to first in their division. They're going to win this game. And I think that ultimately it's just going to be one of those games where their pass rush is going to overwhelm the Browns' really bad O-line.
Okay. I would say they came out of the bye week very well. That's my one point, is that they would be fresh coming out of the bye week. But then I have a counter argument that they don't fucking know if Le'Veon Bell's going to show up.
Well, he's not playing this week at this point. He hasn't reported yet.
Said he would be there. And now he's said fucking he would be still there. Not
and
there.
He also said he would be there in week 1. And then he's going to be there by week 11. And my fantasy team's going to fade into irrelevance.
Yes, exactly. As is mine. It's going to shit pile at the moment. So thanks, Le'Veon. Still got the Steelers winning, though.
I know.
Here's a juicy one. Lots of trees here. The 3-3 Seahawks at the 3-3 Lions. A little mini forest we have going on here.
So I think this
here.
One we're
going
to get some disagreement on. I actually really like this Lions team.
Okay.
I know that they are on paper flawed and all these other things, but I just feel like they've accepted their identity, which is we're going to feed the ball to Kerryon Johnson, and every other time we're going to have Stafford and shotgun. And I feel like that's exactly how this offense needs to run. The other part is just bringing in Snacks Harrison this week, having like Ziggy Ansah against this horrible Seahawks line. I feel like Russell's just going to be running on that turf every single second of this game.
I had kind of settled on Seattle before I knew that Snacks was being traded. And like, he is the type of player where you can just plug him in anywhere. He doesn't really need to know what the fucking playbook is. He's just going to see a ball carrier and he's going to knock the piss out of him. And that's all there is to it.
It's easy enough, right?
Yeah. For a defense, an interior defensive lineman whose sole job really is to stop the run and not really get any sacks, you can plug him in anywhere.
Yep.
I do like the Seahawks just because the last few weeks they seem to be getting something going. They've had injuries, but they've navigated them well. So we will have our first disagreement there.
I'm totally
the Hawks winning.
I think that we're going to end up looking back in a few weeks, and this is one of those things that could totally backfire my face, but I think we're going to look at it and say Detroit is surprisingly a contender for their division.
Yeah, and it's a great division. Really good to watch.
But at the same point, like, none of them are really overperforming right now.
Yeah,
like,
they're all very tightly grouped.
Yeah.
We thought they'd be tightly grouped just playing at a better level, I suppose you could say at the start.
We didn't think
the
Packers and the Vikings would tie. We didn't think that they would have like these weird losses to the Bills. And like, yeah.
Then we have 4-3 Baltimore Ravens at the 4-2 Panthers. Who you got here?
So I struggle with this one a lot. I'm going Panthers only because when they're home, they play really well. They are one of those weird inconsistent teams, but when they're home, things just click the right way.
Yeah.
They're going to run it well. Cam's going to do enough. And then it's just Flacco on the road is just always a little bit worse.
Mm. I found this one tricky. Because Panthers are a bogey team for me. I have a few bogey teams. The Panthers are one. I think the Titans are another.
The
Redskins actually are a bogey team for me as well. And they always get shit off. A good buddy of mine, Sunday, over it. He always makes me aware when I fuck up on the Redskins.
Well, the easy one for the Redskins is literally, are they at home or not this season?
That's true.
Besides the game they played against the Cardinals on the road, which, you know, face it, everyone beats the Cardinals this year.
Yeah. I like the Ravens here just because they were so close to holding the number one scoring offense in the Saints. And I just don't think that Cam and the Panthers are on that level. So I do actually think that the Ravens win here.
I think it's going to be one of those really good games.
Ballsy call is Justin Tucker to get the winning field goal and bounce back from last week.
Oh boy.
So let's hope that he gets the job done. Because, you know, kickers, when they start missing big kicks, can be a downward spiral very quick for these guys. Mason Crosby has been leveled it off somewhat.
Like, this would be an all-time decline to go from like the most accurate kicker in NFL
just based
history,
on one kick.
One extra point and it all fell apart.
And that was the last kick he ever hit.
Yeah. He's like, I'll bounce back. No, he didn't. Yeah.
Speaking of Redskins, they are playing my Giants. 4-2 Redskins at the 1-6 New York shit show. The Giants are trading players. The Redskins are the surprise team. I don't think any of us were really crazy about them, were we, at the start of the year?
I know.
I'm going to be bold and say, I think it might be time to give Kyle Lauletta a shot soon at quarterback. Why not?
I think it's getting close.
You're a losing team.
I think it's getting very, very close.
You're trading pieces. You got this guy. I'm still scratching my head about why they traded Davis Webb last year.
I think it's just because you got Kyle and then they're just like, fuck it.
Like, unless they saw something really strong in training camp that's like, Lauletta's a better quarterback, it's just odd that you'd spend a high draft pick on a quarterback, not even give him a shot, with the weapons that he could potentially have around him.
I know. Lauletta was, what, a fifth round for you guys?
Sixth or seventh, okay. Yeah. So
We all know a special quarterback in the Boston era is a sixth round draft pick.
Exactly. Well, the Pats were high on Lauletta. A lot of people saying that if he dropped, that the Pats were going to take him.
Yep.
So I got the Redskins winning just because the Giants are shy.
Ballsy call of the week.
No fucking way.
I did this mainly for your reaction. But yeah, I'm going for this. The Redskins have one of the worst rush defenses in football.
Surprising, given they have two studs from Alabama as defensive tackles.
I know. Daron Payne has been having a very underratedly great season, though. But this surprises me a lot. I'm going Giants here. Not at all because I trust Eli, but just because I think it's one of those games where Saquon has just an insane, like, 200-yard, two-touchdown game.
Okay.
And it's just enough. Like, it's going to be like a 17-14 like shit show game. If the game breaks 20, there's no way you win.
So you know I'm putting the struggling Eli face now in your
I'm
going
to enjoy it. I mean, to be fair, the struggling Eli face right next to a nutsack is just the visual that Pats fans have been wanting to see for years.
It's just a shame you didn't pick the Browns, because then we would have had that in there as well.
I know.
We have a AFC West rematch, which was only a few weeks ago, 4 weeks ago. Mahomes had that comeback in Denver. We have the 3-4 Broncos at the 6-1 Chiefs. And like, the Broncos are one of those teams where 1 week the offense disappears, 1 week the defense disappears. So I just think Mahomes is like, we have seven games now to judge him on. He's pretty fucking good. I think he wins here.
I think
he puts big numbers up again.
Can we talk for a second? I think he's like the real deal. I've been consistently like always thinking about who's that next face of the league.
Mm.
And it just feels like Wentz and Mahomes are just like going to be there for like a decade. And it's just, it's unbelievable to watch. Like, he's coming at the perfect time where just a guy with a rocket arm and good accuracy can just...
Good weapons, too. It helps. Look at what he's throwing.
And then the coach combo with Andy Reid. Like, all those things are beautiful.
Like, solid running back. He has one of the best tight ends for the short stuff over the middle. He has burners on the outside. It's the fucking perfect situation for
him. And the biggest thing is, like, they're like, them and the Rams are the only two teams that do this, which is they run a guy in motion every single play.
Yeah.
And the thing is, everyone's like, oh, why are you doing that? So much razzle-dazzle, whatever. The easiest thing is that because you have a young QB, that gives you the easiest read of zone or man right away.
Mm-hmm.
You run a guy right across the field, guess what? If a guy's following you, they're running man in some regard. You look what the safeties are doing.
Yeah, yeah.
If they don't, they're running zone. You look at where it is, and then you find out the place that's going to work out. And it's just, it's such an easy thing that, like, by comparison, you see someone like the Cowboys who just don't. They keep all their guys static on every single play. And you're like, this is why you are an archaic offense versus everyone else.
So you got the Chiefs.
Chiefs for sure.
Your Bucks 3-3 at the 4-3 Bengals. Jesus, it feels like Fitzmagic is just a lifetime ago at this stage.
We were
all so hyped with the beard and all. And the Bucks are battling to get back over 500.
It's not happening.
The Bengals were fucking humiliated by the Chiefs.
And that's why.
I think they bounce back.
Exactly. It's reason one and two, which is the Chiefs are at home. The Bengals are at home, and the Bengals need to win to stop this spiral.
Yep.
They can't go to 4-4 after starting 4-1.
Yeah.
It's just as simple as it is.
Absolutely. Then we have the Jets at the Bears. And I'm actually flying back from Chicago on Saturday night. I'm kind of disappointed now I didn't change the flights and stay to Sunday.
Why? So you watch the Mitchell Trubisky show?
Just go to a game in Soldier Field, you know?
Soldier Field is a cool place.
Yeah, like, I know it's going to be cold as fuck, but, like, just to go to a game in Soldier Field, it's so legendary. Good folklore there. I would like to go see a game. But I do think that the Bears will win this game. The Jets have a lot of injuries now on offense. Like,
Bilal Powell for the year, just announced today.
Potentially career-ender, read earlier on.
This neck.
Which is always bad. Terrell Pryor, now he's gone. Inua has been in and out.
He's out for a few more weeks.
So they signed Rashard Matthews, who was a cast-off from the Titans. So they have a lot of problems on offense. Yeah, I just can't see them putting up enough points
on
that defense.
Like, yeah, the Bears defense is going to just destroy Sam Darnold today. Not today, but on Sunday. It's just going to be like one of those games where, like,
Sounds quite ominous.
But if you're playing...
Destroy him.
Well, but honestly, though, like, Darnold threw two picks and got sacked like five times against the Vikings. And the Vikings defense is a shell of what we thought it was. The Bears defense is going to have such a fun time going back to, like, what they thought they could have been at the earliest part of the season. Be like, yeah, you see, we destroyed them. So, like, they're going to be 4-3 after this. It's going to be out.
Afternoon games, we have the 2-5 Colts at the 1-5 Raiders. Who you got here?
I mean, I'm taking the one team that's, like, actually still playing this season. So the Colts, yeah. The Raiders are completely checked out at this point. And it's like, there's a ton of reports about, like, the players are so pissed off at Gruden for how he's handling all these trades.
Mm.
Gruden was on the practice field, literally right next to Amari Cooper, coaching him on a route. All of a sudden, Reggie McKenzie, the GM, comes down. Hey, John, you got a second? Yeah, what's up? He walks away. He's like, so we just got offered first for Amari. He's like, okay. And he's like, Cooper!
No off the field. Jesus.
And it's like, when you have that happen, like...
That's not good. Because he was telling the players a week before that Cooper's not...
And, like, you're seeing Derek Carr, like, trying to go into Instagram right now to talk about how he doesn't have a, quote, fractured relationship with his teammates. And I love being in Oakland, defending the city that they're moving away from next year anyways.
When you're having to say that.
Falling off the rails. And if you're them, like, if a team's going to randomly offer you a second for Carr, offer you a first for your safety, you're going to take everything that's on the table right now. Because then they already own 3 first-rounders. They own 5 in the next 2 years. They're going for everything they can. Because Gruden knows he's on a 10-year contract.
Yeah.
So, again, Steve O'Rourke, sorry, bud.
He'll agree. And I was reading Captain Luke's Twitter account earlier. He said he got the care package of squirrel oil from Mudder. So his sidearm is well oiled up for this game. I can see him putting up some good numbers here in Oakland. So good luck to Captain Luck.
Yeah.
We have, this is a juicy one, 3-2-1, getting fucking sick of saying these. 3-2-1, Packers at the 7-0 Los Angeles Rams. like Rodgers, he's just every time he seems to be able to put up some magic in the fourth quarter. So I'm figuring the Rams will have to go out to an early lead.
I'm so excited for this game. So here's my like my bold prediction for this. I agree, Rams are winning. If the Rams score under 30, the Packers win.
So you're looking at the analytics here.
I just think it's one of those things where, like, I think if the Rams can put enough pressure, and basically them scoring 30 means that they're controlling the clock, they're running girly, they're doing all those things they need to do. Because right now, that secondary, as great as it will be later in the season when Talib is back, when Marcus Peters is healthy, right now it's a shell of what it could be. And I just think if the Packers do these things the right way and Rodgers is having the time he needs, where, like, that pass rush, as great as it is taking a second against his equally great offensive line, I think Rodgers can carve them up on defense.
It's going to be a shootout.
Yeah,
I think we could be looking at 60 plus here.
And that's what I'm saying. It just feels like one of those things where, like, even if like the Vegas over-under is like 55, like, hammer the over.
Yeah, definitely, yeah. Then we have a NFC West clash. One
can
and
we
six.
Really call this a clash?
No.
It's like a it's crawl.
Patty cake. 1-6 49ers at the 1-6 Cardinals. This is just a smelly game. Every now and then I say, just this is a smelly
flip
game.
Flip a coin and move on.
This
just flip a coin.
It's a smelly one. Two shit teams. What more can you say about it? But somehow Byron Leftwich is still in the NFL.
Well, I'm actually
as their
really
offensive
I'm really
coordinator
happy.
Now.
I'm really happy.
I think he has a little spark. I'm going to give it to the Cardinals.
I think he could. I really would love to see it. I just feel like this is one of the times where Kyle Shanahan, just out of pure pride, is like, guys, we need to fucking win.
We need
win
to win this game. Yeah. So we disagree on that. Sunday night football.
Yeah, well, let's get really heated about cards 49ers right now.
We go from that to Sunday night football.
Which is awesome.
It's a belter of a game. 5-1 Saints at the 4-2-1 Minnesota Vikings. Go.
So I'm saying Saints. So before the season, we had all talked about like who we thought was the NFC championship game. And you guys had said, you and Jared, I believe, both said Rams-Vikings.
I did.
I said Rams-Saints. And I very firmly still believe that those are the two best teams in the NFC. I think the Vikings are probably the third best team there. But it's just like, I just think that, especially the Vikings defense just doesn't show up in a major way. If the Saints can run the ball, can just control the pace, and it's just, it feels like one of those games where they're just going to just kind of like milk them to death in a sense, where like Kirk Cousins makes one mistake, he takes one sack, and next thing you know, the Saints are still driving, and the Saints are still driving. The Saints are still driving. And it's like, this is one of those games where the Saints win a game that's like 24-21, but it's like they make it just look so dominant.
Okay.
Just how they consistently move the ball.
And they're going to have that bitterness over what happened last year.
Exactly.
They want that revenge. They're going to come out and get it.
I was going to say, no. The underrated thing is Thielen going for his 8th straight game with 100-plus receiving yards.
Literally what I was just about to say. That he said, no, he's had 7 100-plus receiving yards.
So the 8th would tie him for the NFL record,
which
with
is
Calvin Johnson.
Oh, well, that's pretty good company. And like the fact that Thielen was undrafted, you know, he is. It's a great story. I love watching him play.
The other thing we can't underrate is just like similar to the NFC Championship game, while it's a road game for Breeze, it's a dome.
Yeah.
Guy got to play 10 games this year in domes.
Does well in domes, yeah. I think Thielen has 150 plus yards this week.
I think
he has a big game. It saddens me because there's so many.
Thielen and Diggs.
There's
both
so many Buckeyes
games.
In that fucking secondary for the Saints.
I know, but I think
both
Thielen and Diggs have huge games. Like,
yeah.
But we've seen the stats. Like Kirk Cousins throws like 80% when he targets Thielen or Diggs, and it's like 60% for anyone else.
Yeah. Monday Night Football then finish off 5-2 Pats versus 2-5 Bills. I'm going to be quick.
It's
first
Pats.
Point,
it's
Pats. Second point, Derek Anderson.
Yeah. Or Peterman. Who cares?
Peterman. Whoever the fuck it is, they're going to lose.
Yeah.
Same.
Same.
Easy one. Easy one to finish off. Grant, what are we giving the... We're going to finish up with our smashed pumpkin. It's a lot of pumpkin, but it's also very strong. So I don't really know, you know... It kind of masks the hoppiness that I like in a...
I know.
In
it,
an ale, you
it
know?
Didn't give me the lasting taste I like as much. I'm going to go like a 7.5.
Okay.
It's like, it was fine. I would gladly drink it. It's probably better than most pumpkin beers I've had.
Yeah.
Like, it's not as pumpkin forward.
Mm.
But, you know, just to your point, like, when we have a beer that's this percentage, you want some hoppy.
Yes. I am going to give it not as much. I'm just going to give it a flat 7 because it actually does taste quite flat to me. I'm just used to more hoppiness. Grant, so that's Smashed Pumpkin by Shipyard Brewing Company. Nice little can.
Yeah, I love the design.
Very orange for Halloween.
Yeah.
Grant, so we've got our pick 6 in the books. We've also got our 2-point conversion, so we've got our picks. We'll have our picks up on the social media pages over the weekend. Make sure you're following us. We're on Facebook, we're on Insta, and we're on Twitter. Feel free to, you can actually review our Facebook page, actually, which I never really ask anybody to do. It's always review the podcast. But if you enjoy the random shite that I put up on the Facebook page, feel free to drop us a little review there.
Or just call us out more often. Yeah. Just like random shit, random takes.
If we talk absolute bollocks, which we do a lot of the time, feel free to call us out. And we will have our Paddy's Picks going up against the Cover Zero podcast Zingers. I think they won last week. I think Barkley was the difference there, that he had quite a few points against the Falcons. So we're 2-2 on the year. Hopefully we can get back above 500 this week in week 8. And that will do it, really. Episode 47, Paddy Pigskin in the books. Myself and Barry are going to go off and watch the World Series now. Hopefully the Red Sox get another W. So cheers to that. And tune in next time where, as always, we will have less slant and more slantcha. Take care. Contest for the smokers. I predict snow, Al Roker. If you know, you know. I only ever looked up to Sosa. You all get a bird, this nigga Oprah. Bricklayers in ball shorts, coaching from the side of the ball court. If you know, you know. One stop like a Walmart. We got the tennis balls for the wrong sport. If you know, you know. If you know about the carport, them trap doors supposed to be awkward. If you know, you know. That's the reason we ball for. Circle round twice for the encore. If you know, you know. You ever been hit with the water weight, then had to wait? Do you walk away? If you know, you know. When we all clicking like Golden State, and you and your team are the motorcade. If you know, you know. Been granting wishes like a genie to bad hoes in two-piece bikinis. I've been hiding where you can see me. The skybox is right next to Riri's. Solely responsible for showing rappers how to stand on the front lines when trappers started throwing bands. Where were you when Big Meech brought the Tigers in? Cause I was busy earning stripes like a tiger skin. Bricklayers in ball shorts, coaching from the side of the ball court. If you know, you know. One stop like a Walmart. We got the tennis balls for the wrong sport. If you know, you know. If you know about the carport, them trap doors supposed to be awkward. If you know, you know. That's the reason we ball for. Circle round twice for the encore. If you know, you know.